Siren Radio.
Ah, fantastic. So, Archie.
I noticed it made the front cover of the Gibraltar Chronicle, the notion of the latest addition to the, some might say freeloaders, other might say seventh in line to the throne. I don't know. You make your decision, etc. I don't know. Does that mean if there's a female to follow up, should we call Josie after Josie and the Pussycats, of course, another classic American cartoon series?
The name I wasn't expecting. I don't think anyone was expecting Archie. But if you think of the long version of the name Archibald, it's not too bad.
Really? Sorry.
It sounds more royal.
Really?
Arthur's a bit more royal, though, isn't it? Arthur's a bit sort of...
Arty.
Yeah, but King Arthur was once.
Well, he was.
So I mean, it makes sense, wouldn't it, if there's something like Arthur? But if we had a Richard, do you think Richard Fitzwilliam would have been happy?
Probably delighted.
I imagine
he would be.
Named him after Richard.
Exactly. Well done. Richard Fitzwilliam will clearly be discussing that at length in his feature in betwixt reviewing Longshot and Eighth Grade. But enough of such stuff, because I know if little baby Archie is listening, hello.
I'm sure he's glued to his radio at the minute.
I think it's essential. I mean, certainly Harry and Meghan, regular Midweek Drive Morning Edition listeners, and we appreciate the joy and happiness. They like a little bit of ribbing, etc. Because that's the way they go, really, from that point of view. I think it's time for the official royal wedding from Gibraltar, as officially endorsed by the awesome Gabriella Peralta.
Okay, so the weather today is highs of 10 degrees centigrade, lows of 3 degrees centigrade, and it will be a day with light showers and a gentle breeze.
Live from Gibraltar, with or without her faithful friend Frodo, it's time for Gabriella Peralta on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
And it's very rare that you actually get, sad face when it comes to social media posts on the Gibraltar Chronicle Facebook page. But I see with hashtag in perspective of teachers and pay claims, a call for reasonableness, the Gibraltar Chronicle has actually taken a particular stance on this. Now, we were talking about education last week, Gabriella.
That's a columnist, so they're allowed to have an opinion. We run opinion pieces, so we'll run some labeled as opinion from people who aren't regulars, and then our regular columnists are allowed to say what they think.
And that, of course,
so that's how we put the regular readers would put okay.
So much as William Sitwell can actually give a regular weekly column to the Daily Telegraph, in which, has to be said, the restaurant this week doesn't do that well, or rather last week.
Another one.
Exactly. Another one, and another one. This is exactly so many times that he's actually gone through that. It's that sort of notion of ultimately you've got a certain amount of latitude to actually develop your own particular way if it's a columnist that's actually there. And I won't ask you for your own views on the whole thing, because that would be unfair and not
appropriate. And I will not answer.
Exactly. So, on both situations, we respect that right not to answer, because we wouldn't ask the question in the first place. So there you go. Yeah, 3-star menu he actually gave this week with the line, a cosy bistro makes for a safe haven in war-torn Taunton, but avoid Sundays. Anyway.
Which I'm guessing is where he made his mistake.
Maybe he didn't avoid Sundays, but still, never mind. Ben, what would you like to find out about either the state of consciousness or play with respect to Frodo? Because clearly...
Well, I'd ask about Frodo, but I'm assuming he's not with you.
No, I wouldn't be with
you. No, he's not.
He's alive, that's what I want to confirm. Saying he's not with you, as in he's dead, but he's not physically with you.
He's not physically with me, but he's very well taken care of by my parents and went to the spa a few days ago. Mm-hmm. So we call it the spa, but it's basically a dog groomers. We call it that, so he feels a bit better about it. He doesn't like going, but he puts up with it, and he comes out with probably half the fur that he had before, because he just shed so much.
So we appreciate that, and I think it's good news from that point of view. And is Lord Frodo the Pug still Instagramming?
Yes, but I'm really bad at it. I don't... I haven't been putting regularly for probably like a year.
Gabriella, you know that Frodo has difficulty with his paws actually getting hold of the camera and the keyboard from that point of view. He relies on you to actually update it from that perspective. Who knows what could happen if we don't keep the thing updated? Very strange. Of course, in terms of Archie, there was Archibald Gemmell. Archie Gemmell, I actually do have his autograph. Probably best known for being a footballer who used to play for Derby County and Nottingham Forest, and indeed scored a very good goal for Scotland against Holland in the 1978 World Cup. But I just raised that for interest, the value alone from that point of view. Has there been a kind of general line of expectation, anticipation in Gibraltar? I mean, what's the word on the street? Or is it a case of, well, you know, we need to have the Royals because otherwise how else can we claim to be British?
Well, we enjoy the Royals. Mm. So Royal Baby, I think, is probably received the same as it would be in the rest of Britain. So people were... patiently waiting for the very they were kind of far apart, all the announcements. It's not been a normal Royal Baby announcement where you just, you know, Kate would come out with Linda Wing, here's my baby, here's the pictures, here's the name, here's this feels like it's been drawn out.
It's a bit like announcing the names of the English football team going off to the World Cup by having celebrities actually make the announcements, really, you know, David Beckham saying.
Yeah, and on Instagram as well.
Yeah.
So it felt like it's felt a bit unroyal, a bit modern, hasn't it?
Yeah, a bit
very celebrity.
How long then? How long before we see the first royal going into the jungle? There we are. Just put that out there. How long?
I don't know.
Make a wager now.
I'm sure they're okay.
Make a wager.
You
could actually
20 years for Archie to do it.
Well, yeah, it could well be the same sort of line as a wager that was actually made on Trump winning the snooker. And, you know, lo and behold, somebody's actually about £10,000
better. Trump.
I said Trump. Trump.
Yeah, but I mean, that was a good.
I'm sure Donald would take reference for the whole thing. I mean, how many Trumps are actually out there who play snooker?
1,000 to 1, wasn't it?
Exactly. Anyway, we're not encouraging gambling, but if you do, gamble responsibly. End of. It's coming up to 9:15 past 8 o'clock in Britain. But in Gibraltar, it's nearly 9:22 past 9 o'clock. That's time for you, isn't it, Gabriella?
Yeah.
Exactly. So, Ben, would you like to put those last two questions to Gabriella Peralta, who's keen and eager and waiting to deliver her usual response before we go into Archie's party with the Archies?
Yes. Gabriella, have you had a reasonably interesting telephone appointment for today?
I have, thank you.
Brilliant. And will you be joining us again next week?
Yep.
Yeah, you may well be. We won't be, Gabriella, because we'll be in London.
Are you away?
Well, the show will go on. We may do a pre-record. The show will go on, but we will be in London, hopefully. Actually, we won't be there next... I don't know, we'll be close by, we'll be probably sort of, you know, all being well. So it will be in 2 weeks' time, will you return, Gabriella?
That's my fault.
No, it's okay.
Well, now I have to think. No, I would be back.
We'll get your people to speak to our people. I'm sure we'll get somewhere meeting in the middle. That's the way forward.
Bye.
Archie's going to be there. Archie's party, let's be there too. What a perfect way to have a totally manufactured American band to actually celebrate, oh, I don't know, some recent birth that's actually made there. Probably just Archie Gamble. I don't know. Richard Fitzwilliams, any thoughts on yourself?
Well, I have to say that, I mean, obviously, along with everybody else, I got all my predictions totally wrong, because it's certainly fun. It's certainly fascinating, and it's also meant that when if they enlarge their family in the future, which I suspect they will, can you just imagine the predictions? I mean, it's impossible to predict. You would have had no idea. Archie, apparently, they just like the name, and it's not Archibald. It's just Archie, yeah. And apparently they won't be taking the title, which it's rather like possibly that Camilla is Duchess of Cornwall and she is Princess of Wales.
Worry not, Richard. We've got Let Love Rule by Archie Roach. We've got Welcome Royal Charlie with the Archie Soul, the Archies and Sugar Sugar. There's so there's Archie Gemmell, of course, the Scottish international footballer of a wee
well,
while
Archie
back.
Leachers. Cary Grant is the
of
one
course.
I knew.
Well,
rather like Harrison was Harrison Ford. But the interesting derivation of Harrison, apparently, is that it's an Anglo-Aboriginal name, so that may well be a nod to Archie's mixed-race heritage, which is so symbolically important.
It's Archie's party. Exactly.
Well, and a lovely photograph of the Queen.
But
the
when do we ever say a baby looks ugly? You know, when do we actually say it's not lovely? I mean, and he looks like Winston Churchill to me, so why not Winston? I really don't know, but never mind.
Well, I mean, you cannot, of course, see a great deal. This was a problem with some of the photos, because, of course...
we really need forensic detail, I think. Let's put the word in now for the Sussex family. We should have had forensic detail and full disclosure.
Oh, I'm not sure they would agree with you there. I mean, there will be more disclosures when we discover on the birth certificate where the baby was actually born. I mean, the palace's handling of sending out messages by email when Meghan was going into labour, when in fact the baby had been born hours before, is indeed the most puzzling feature of us. But it's a very, very joyous occasion, and I have to say, what a week, and indeed what a historic week, and how fascinating for that lovely photo opportunity that they chose one of the grandest venues in the country, St. George's Hall, dating back, I mean, of course, the fire meant it had to be totally rebuilt, but to originally for Edward III and the Knights of the Garter. Absolutely magnificent, and the scene of many posing banquets. And certainly, interesting to see Harry was holding the baby. I mean, they're doing everything their way, and this is a completely new couple with an international reach and a global brand.
On the dance floor, I saw young people dancing all sorts of steps. I joined them doing my own kind of dance steps and finding myself face to face with a girl, I was not the least bored. Not my words, but the words of the new Crown Prince hero and the future Emperor of Japan, the Emperor and the Crown Prince when he was actually attending to Merton College in Oxford. Wonderful sort of experience there, and a little feature in the Daily Telegraph of Saturday with a night of merriment with Japan's future emperor.
The emperor has apparently not personally written about, but somehow they've got hold of that. It was very interesting. I have to say that I do not envy the occupant of the chrysanthemum throne, because although it may go back all those generations to the sun god, Amaterasu, and I think Jimmu was the original one. The tombs are guarded and archaeologists have not been permitted to examine them. The facts are that it is controlled by an organization called the Imperial Household Agency. There are 1,000 members of it, and they strictly control everything the royal family does. So not only the Empress Masako, but also her predecessor, because Emperor Akihito has, of course, abdicated, have suffered from depression, and there have been real problems. They've been put under such pressure. I mean, the need to have a male heir, for example, it's all nonsense, because Japan has had regents who were empresses. Gosa Kiribati in 1762 was the last one, and I mean...
Yeah, but that was too early. I mean, you know, we've got to give it a few more hundred years before we actually go back to the distaff side again.
Of course, I mean, the 1860s, since then, the emperor had this divine status, and that, of course, ceased after the war in 1947. But subsequent to that, and of course, the links with the Shinto religion are so important, it's this curious state. I mean, in Thailand, you've got this rather extraordinary situation where, you know, the Lace Majesty criticized the monarch, and indeed, they have a very eccentric one on the throne at the moment. But in Japan, it's this lacking of what it had before. It hasn't managed to assimilate as other monarchies in the West have with the contemporary era, and it really is a very, very difficult situation, I think, for anybody to be a Japanese royal.
2 weeks after leaving Britain, Prince Hiro told reporters that his image of an ideal wife had recently changed. A woman who speaks without timidity is my ideal now, but I can't marry a foreigner. He added that he now wanted three qualities in a wife: that she plays sports, that she expressed confident opinions, and that she'd be able to speak foreign languages. She did get married, but unfortunately, the wife didn't manage to quite last from that point of view. Indeed, the prince said after the divorce, "To me, she appears totally exhausted from it." Oh, well, never mind. It'll happen.
King Vajiralongkorn of Thailand. I mean, putting on a hat like that, I mean, the crown was extraordinary if you looked at the ceremony. And then wearing that cowboy hat afterwards, absolutely priceless.
It just sums the whole thing up. From now, actually, Ben, I thought it was you sitting in your rooms here at Lincoln,
wow.
but no, you know, there we are. That's the future
emperor. It wasn't, good heavens, I mean, nothing like a ceremony. The ceremony was wonderfully colourful, but I have to say that one of the most memorable facts of, it is said, of the king when crown prince was making his dog, Fufu, poodle, Air Chief Marshal. I mean, that Fufu is fortunately...
Hey, if Frodo can actually have a day at a spa in Gibraltar, I'm sure the Japanese can make a canine Air Chief Marshal. It happens.
It's not the Japanese, it's the Thailand. Thailand Air Chief Marshal Fufu. There was a rather embarrassing video that featured him and one of the Crown Prince's wives. He married, as you know, just before the coronation as well.
Well, that was quite a long shot. See what I did there, Richard? Easily sort of...
Indeed, a long shot, and may I enthuse about long shot, because I love political films, and it's very rare when you've got a comedy which has got genuine pathos, and where you really feel, well, it's just the chemistry between the actors that worked. So it was hilarious, but also it was a movie with genuine pathos.
And Charlize Theron.
I know, and in real life, you know, you sometimes get this. Two characters so totally opposed, and yet it's such fun, and it's sometimes touching. Charlize Theron is the Secretary of State Charlotte Field. Seth Rogen is, ex-neighbor, in fact, but he's a journalist. Fred Flasky, a name that implies that he's perhaps an unusual type of character wearing a baseball cap. Maybe had a bit of a slob socially, but firstly we meet him when he's investigating neo-Nazis in the greatest of danger. Here's the sort of question. What do you do when you have part of a swastika tattoo on your body? He's, after all, an undercover journalist, and then they discover who he is, and, the tattooing ceases. He has to escape. It is a very funny film. You have the Secretary of State actually once being a neighbor and his nanny, and the fact that he had a crush on her when he was a child. There's a hilarious background to it in a scene where young actors play them as children, which is very funny. In fact, it's all very funny. They meet at a posh party. She's intending to succeed the current president, Chambers, played by Bob Odenkirk, who's not running again for a second term. And, well, his dress, his behavior, I mean, can she get away with him? They get away with it because they've got this odd chemistry. And her team are desperate that her run won't be completely derailed by having a boyfriend who's, somebody you can't easily pass off. The point is that she's planning worldwide green initiatives to launch her run as president. She needs backing for President Chambers if it's to succeed. Now, can she be a runner and keep her principles? After all, he's a journalist, but unfortunately, he's been fired, so she hires him, and, they become lovers, but is this the sort of romance that could possibly play out in public? And what of nefarious newspaper proprietors who might have plans that clash with the green initiatives that the Secretary of State is planning? I mean, this is a movie which has got a lot of humor. Some of it's wonderfully, the scatological bits, some of the scenes are certainly not that you would forget. It's got genuine tension, too, when they have a visit because he's hired by her and write her speeches. Then they go to Manila and, there are genuinely exciting scenes there. There's also a scene, I have to say, occasionally it goes over the top. I didn't know what Molly was.
A Seth Rogen movie going over the top. I'm astounded.
I know. I didn't know what Molly was. I gather it's ecstasy.
Please, yeah. I mean, that's almost as bad as saying that Adam Sandler is an understated actor.
Well, but Rogen manages to put a lot of... As I say, it's genuinely touching. When you've got a couple who are so in love and yet so different, and you've got certain social conventions... yes, of course, it's overdone in some of the scenes. Certainly, when the Secretary of State has to deal with a kidnap and she's high, well, it's... That, I thought, was rather weak. But this is a fun movie. This I thoroughly enjoyed, and I recommend it because the script is funny, and the scenes in it are most amusing, and because the chemistry, I thought, was excellent.
Well, there you go. Richard, before we move on to the next little scenario...
Directed by Jonathan Levine, I would mention.
Absolutely, and it would not have been a complete Fitzwilliams review had you not actually put in that little slight end piece there, which is very good. Now, I tend to get confused with Gary's next week, when we're delightfully to hopefully all being well be on location once again with your good self and others and friends, etc. Is it the National Portrait Gallery we're heading off to?
It is the Mall Galleries in the Mall. Yesterday, in fact, was the private view of the Royal Society of Portrait Painters, which have their annual exhibition, from which begins today and is open till the 24th, and has a fascinating selection of portraits. I think it's my favourite of all the exhibitions I've promoted, and I've done its publicity since 2002.
This is going to be superb. That's teasing ahead, because for one moment I wasn't sure whether we were also checking out David Hockney Drawing from Life at the National Portrait Gallery, but that's a different line entirely. Thank you. Just wanted to clarify things. Let us move on to the next little stage.
We move on also to an exciting movie, and this the director, Bo Burnham, has got some ideas here which really work so wonderfully well. This is a film that has had raves for ages, and indeed, it has only just opened, and Eighth Grade is... when I say the words Elsie Fisher, I am talking about an actress, a young actress who is going to make it really big. She plays Kyla, an eighth grade student finishing her final week at a New York public school. She posts videos on YouTube talking about her struggles to make friends. She's rather shy, giving an insight on life generally, and her father, Mark, played by Josh Hamilton, he's single, he tries to connect with her, and she has problems. It's really a question of, it's a coming-of-age film, but with a difference, but it is so genuine. It is one of these movies where not a great deal, you could argue, actually happens, but what happens is what would happen in the life of everyday life of a teenager, and that's what makes it so appealing and so convincing and also so touching. And there are scenes in this that are so funny. What happens when her father, for example, comes into the kitchen and finds her eating a banana? She hates bananas, so why is she eating it? Well, there's a very funny explanation, and that's just one scene, which I really, really recommend this movie, because when she goes to, say, a pool party or party where someone tries to pick her up. What happens? What's the result? And how does she deal with life as she discovers it? I mean, a coming-of-age movie can be terribly cliched, but it can be genuinely touching and absorbing. And this is so imaginative, and her YouTube videos, they chronicle this, and it's a movie it's just hits the right note throughout.
Ben Lewis, will you be falling in love with Elsie Fisher, given that you're a lot closer to the age of the actress than obviously Richard or myself?
Well, I think it'd be quite an interesting film to watch. I don't think relatable to me.
Really?
No.
It'll make lists?
Apart from maybe the age, but that's probably the closest. But
all the social media side of things?
Yeah, but, you know, it's interesting. It's certainly an interesting film, but I think I'd prefer the first film with Seth Rogen, if I'm honest. Oh. I've always been a big fan of Seth Rogen films. I've never had one disappoint. And,
well, Knocked Up was, I think, the movie that made his name, because that soared. Really, the box office takings were fabulous. I mean, that really was a movie that I as to quote from Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, the Edward Albee play, I bust a gut.
So it'd be thumbs up as far as you're concerned, Ben, for definitely
I'd say they're both
long
thumbs
shot.
Up. They're both thumbs up, but I prefer long shot.
An eighth grade lesson. Yeah, interesting. 13-year-old Kayla enduring the tidal wave of contemporary suburban adolescence as she makes her way through the last week of middle school. Do you remember the last week of middle school?
It's a lovely film. It really works.
You see, this the middle schools somewhere around the country. There's something we used to be middle schools.
Some people have junior schools,
yes.
And some people have.
Did you just
schools.
Go straight to sixth form then?
No, so I had primary school, secondary school, uh-huh. And then college. I went to a college. My school did offer a sixth form in my second year, but
enough,
I didn't go to it.
Enough already, thank you. Yeah. I've been there, done that.
Move on.
Snap. Yeah, exactly.
Elsie Fisher is 16, and as I say,
and Ben's 22. But other than that, you know.
Watch.
Exactly.
Golden Globe nomination she got for it, and I really think that we'll be talking about her again.
A bit like Chloe Moretz Grace, or Chloe Grace Moretz.
True.
Yes, so she was very good indeed. Mm.
Well, there we have it, Richard. I mean, astounding long shot, eighth grade, Royal Baby Archie, no title, but still a nice name. A whole change
well,
of...
Well, there may be a title at the moment. I would point out that whereas they have decided, and naturally they would like to give Baby Archie as normal an upbringing as possible, but by normal I mean, of course, it's going to be one of the most travelled babies of all, of all time, I think. When Prince Charles ascends the throne, I think it very likely that he will bestow Royal Highness titles on all his grandchildren.
Well, there we are.
And I think that is...
Isn't that nepotism, though? Isn't that nepotism?
I think it's a very good interpretation of, or continuation of, the 1917 diktat by George V, who was concerned that too many royals were getting Royal Highness. And I think that that is very, very possible. But it is also true that for the time being, it will be Master Archie Harrison Mountbatten Windsor, and Mountbatten Windsor, of course, since 1960, descendants of the...
And strangely, I would have always said it would have been better if they'd introduced Battenberg to actually keep our European connections going a bit stronger. But then perhaps they didn't.
The German, well, of course, Charles and Camilla are in Germany, and indeed they're making the most of our sexy Coburg Gotha.
Exactly.
Yes, changed to Windsor.
Richard, it has been awesome, but Ben is going to ask you those last two questions with a slight twist, of course, because of where we'll be next week.
So, Richard, firstly, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link for us today on the show?
I absolutely have.
Wonderful. And will we be seeing you again next week?
Oh. You most certainly will. I'm looking forward to it enormously. It's been far too long.
Oh, wonderful.
There we are.
We'll look forward to it.
Meanwhile, here's one for Prince Harry.
She's crazy like a fool.
about her daddy. Oh, she believes in him. She loves her daddy.
If it's not dedicated to Prince Harry, it's certainly dedicated to Ian Lennox, because he's one of the coolest daddies ever. Isn't that right, Ian?
Yes, I'm freezing.
Yeah. Step over ants, put worms back in the grass, rescue baby caterpillars, release spiders back into your garden, open windows for bees to fly home. They are all little souls that deserve a life too. Sadly, 97% of Facebookers will not share this, but let's all share to save the hashtag bees. And you've shared it, Ian, haven't you?
Yes, I have.
Yes. Probably one of the most optimistic posts you put up for many a time, actually. Joys of May the 7th, 11:46 a.m. I hadn't realised, Ian, until I actually currently looking at your social media site, which, of course, we give thanks to the great Mark Zuckerberg for, that there are some mutual friends and colleagues that we are there. Obviously, Tessa Leanne Snart, we are well aware of that. Jodie Orton, I thought, she's looking very young these days. Of course, she's had a child. Yeah, little baby Jodie.
Gosh, I've lost track of them, because... I've basically obviously met them all through your programme.
Well, Shaylee McKenzie. Who can ever forget the joys of Shaylee McKenzie? Shaylee, if you're out there, you can come back again. Don't worry. It's always there. Ian has forgiven you. Only kidding. Tasha Turney, of course, has been doing on-screen material with, of course, the BBC and a variety of other bits and pieces for BBC Nottingham and so on. And I see a young man whose father created the series Callan. That's young Peter Mitchell, who hasn't been with us for years and years.
Oh, yes,
Peter Mitchell. But he's there as well. But it's nice to see that we've kind of, even little Lynn Spencer. I always used to refer to her as little Lynn Spencer, because she's quite small and petite, I think, at 90s television. She's actually up there too. Just goes to show.
Very good friend of mine, Lynn.
Well, but, you know, and yet to actually appear on the programme, maybe one day. Perhaps we'll do a joint personal package on that sort of system. Anyway, you've been listening to, now the other thing that staggered me, and I see in your introduction, retired? Surely not. Surely it should be Ian Lennox, top novelist, not retired.
No. Retired from television.
Could you ever retire from television?
I think I've given up writing fiction after the football results this week, actually.
Well,
just
you see.
To beat that.
Well, I simply say, as sadly predicted, Rafa's guys decided to just lay down and say, listen, Mr. Referee, you can give whatever free kicks you want to Liverpool, even if they're not actually genuine, just to actually add more tension to the true believers of the citizens and so on. Never mind.
It was pretty shocking, wasn't it?
Seriously, a free kick for that? What? Where?
Yeah, well, actually, there's a few supporters of you who supported Liverpool, Liverpool will win the title because they're the underdogs, you know. I've changed allegiance now, because I'd rather see the title won by a great goal like Company scored rather than somebody cheating like the Liverpool players did.
I rest my case. Clearly, Emma Street is so partaying out after last night's support. I mean, if Maurizio Pochettino was actually in tears, Emma Street must be just...
overwhelmed.
She'll be beside herself twice over, no doubt. So a final of Tottenham versus the Cheetahs. Who's going to go? Who's going to go in that
situation? You sound a little bit angry.
No, it was going to be a Johan Cruyff tribute. It was going to be a case of the maestro of Dutch football who led his expertise and cigarette smoking to Barcelona and a whole stack of other things, but it paved the way for so many routines.
See, when you're a Brighton fan, you don't have to worry about these things. You just watch. As I'm sure Ian is aware as well, as a Newcastle
fan. might be at the ends of the country, but my God, we've got the same thoughts.
Yeah, there you are. I knew it did bond.
I want Man City to win, though. I think Man City deserve it more than Liverpool. I don't really... I'm not a massive fan of Liverpool, to be honest. What about you, Ian?
Well, as I was saying, until last week, I hoped they would win, because it was just nice to see somebody else win it, you know, as opposed to a massively backed club.
I'm sorry. Liverpool penniless. A Liverpool penniless.
Not spent a new team for $1 billion.
Yes.
In fact, I think you may find, if you look at the sort of books, you'll find that they're fairly well off in various other bits and pieces. However, let's progress. A slight issue tying in television and football. I mourn the fact, Ian, and I was bemoaning this fact to Ben off air just about 15, 20 minutes ago. I mourn the fact that the days where I can actually watch free-to-air coverage on television of a European final, a European Cup final,
yes, I know.
Gone.
Yes.
Same with most sports, really.
But, I mean, surely we used to talk about the crown jewels. We used to talk about, obviously, certain things like Wimbledon, the FA Cup final and so on, which are... Yes.
Or even cricket. When was the last time you watched cricket live on general television, i.e. the first four TV channels?
Or five.
Yes.
Or five, potentially, yes.
True. A lot of the big boxing matches are going pay-per-view as well, is it?
I mean, something like a European Cup final, surely for the next generation of folk who don't have wealthy parents who can afford to actually shell out for their BT or Sky Sports or other sort of systems that are actually there, where are they going to get that sort of inspiration from? That, I mean, all right.
Well, you'll have Amazon next year, Alex, so actually you won't be complaining then.
I don't mind Amazon Prime. I'm quite happy with respect to that. I'd like to actually ensure that, you know, tax dodgers are supported. Sorry, you know, I'm only kidding. It's just quoting from Russell T. Davies. Well, you know, I think at the end of the day, what about a joint ticket, Ian? What about a Lennox Leftchuk joint party? We could call it City United. You know, that would be a wonderful way of actually getting both things together. You know, City United.
I presume you mean Newcastle United here, not Manchester United.
I'll leave that to it could be just sort of holding out from that line of things. But in terms of just that sort of line, I don't know, Ian. I mean, I remember, and this was before Ben was born, the days of, and it was Liverpool, and Keegan at the time, and Tommy Smith, and
Ian
I believe
Rush.
Terry McDermott. No, way before Ian Rush, way before that, when they actually beat Borussia Mönchengladbach 3-1 in 1977. Emlyn Hughes was captain, and you can actually watch it live on terrestrial television. And I just think, it's just not there, is it, Ian? It's just not there.
It's money now. We're all making money.
It's always been money, but isn't there a way of actually ensuring that in terms of issues like that, you can actually have certain areas that could be provided? I don't know.
Capitalism for you.
Well, look, the World Cup finals are still on national TV.
Yeah, but for how long? Well, I suppose.
I don't think they would dare change that.
Do you feel? Well, I don't know. FIFA obviously needs to actually squeeze every penny that they can actually get to ensure that they can actually support regimes in the Middle East.
I don't think
Middle
FIFA are in a position to be aggressive about anything at the moment, don't they?
Expand the World Cup. Expand it over the whole Arab states. You know, let's move it on that basis. Let's forget human rights.
Still a lot of worms in that can, aren't there?
Will you be following the delights of the Women World Cup? Of course.
Yes, I will. Yes. Years and years ago, I did a feature up here about the rise of women's football, and I went to see some women's games, the top class games, you know, and I quite enjoyed watching them there. The skill level is quite high, and it's much improved now, actually. But the energy levels are never going to match men because they're not as athletic as we are, obviously. But
I don't know.
It gave them time to play more football, and I liked it.
Apart from Arsenal women, who of course decided to, for whatever reason, win the league, it was another good successful season for our ladies and women from Manchester City, who managed to pick up two trophies, having smashed West Ham United 3-0. Hurrah! That's good stuff.
Right. Well, I suppose you've bought all the best players there as well, have you?
Jeez, you've got this obsession with respect. It's the way, you surround yourself with the best, and therefore you become the best. It's very, it's osmosis.
nothing to do with a multi-billionaire taking over.
Please. You know, honestly, sometimes. Envy is a green-eyed monster that is ill-suited to your fair looks, Mr. Lennox. That's all I was saying. Ill-suited.
Anything, I've got fair looks, you must be a green-eyed monster yourself. Anyway, go on.
Honestly, you know, as Ed Wellman passes the studio, giving us a little friendly wave there. He's not been listening to the programme. You know, it's a different language.
I'm sure he did it on the speaker as he went past.
Do you think so?
Maybe.
Yeah, well, it's a few seconds, yeah. In case you're wondering, it is coming up to 16 minutes to 9 o'clock. In the second part of the production, we'll be talking to an optometrist called Brian Tompkins, and he'll be discussing the importance of driving with the correct eyewear. It would seem, Ian, that the sun... That's the wonderful astronomical object in the sky. Not the tabloid newspaper. Is one of the biggest dangers when actually driving. And 55% of Britons aren't fully aware of driving without the correct eyewear. Have you ever been blinded by the light, Ian, when you've been driving a car and suddenly the sun's shining?
Yes, I don't drive any longer, but I used to hate driving in the autumn because the sun was low.
Mm.
And I used to get my eyes, and I used to get... migraines and things, and I was one of these people who can't really drive at night because the white lights of the cars tend to blind me a bit.
Mm.
I got blind spots. And when I drove in France, they had yellow headlights, so I was okay.
Well,
anyway, that's got nothing to do with the sun, of course. But yes, I'm very sensitive to it.
Yeah. Well, again, we'll find out a bit more about that. We're also going to be talking to Rosie Dummer, who is from Channel 4's Extreme Cake Makers. I wonder if they actually do things like making cakes whilst they're hanging upside down from an aircraft, travelling at an unfeasible speed.
Like extreme sports, but cake making.
Exactly. That's my thought, you see. I must put that to Rosie. She'll be talking about culinary therapy with Help for Heroes and indeed Dean Williams. So that's coming up pretty much after the news. But we have a few moments. So, Ben, what would you like to chat to Ian about? In terms of, you know, this awesome world of Newcastle. Well, you've been to Newcastle once, I believe.
I've been through it.
Been through it.
Yes.
Yeah, Tessa has actually been back to Newcastle since she was actually there for the BBC. Yeah, she has. I only know that because of, again, the social media. And I presume, Ian, like myself, you were... Basically, she ghosted us, I suppose. I mean, she's got another Sound and Country Vision coming up shortly. This evening, in case you're wondering, after 7 o'clock, Sound and Chloe's Vision, Volume 3. It's Chloe Rose. Anyway, over to you, Ben.
Ian, interestingly, if I was to come up to Newcastle, where would you suggest I go and visit?
Yes.
Oh, gosh, it depends what you want to do, I suppose. There's a coast, there's a huge coastline with some castles and long beaches. If you're going to come in the summer, you can go to a place called Bamborough, which is about 50 miles north of Newcastle. You can get the most beautiful beaches that are completely deserted. It's extraordinary. Lovely castle, a lovely cricket pitch in front of it. Or you go to the Sage Museum.
Maybe we might squeeze in before Ben decides to settle in London or in Norfolk or whatever part. Maybe we'll try and actually ensure that he can actually make that little journey. I'll sort of show him. Because we are talking about getting together with William Coles, who's obviously even further north than Newcastle. That's Edinburgh, different country.
Well, you can get the Newcastle on the train from Edinburgh. That's exactly how I ended up going through Newcastle. There's
there
a nice stop there as well.
There you are. Exactly.
He has no excuse.
Newcastle Edinburgh train drive is a lovely drive. It's a lovely ride, rather. It's right at the coast.
Mm. That's brilliant. And you go through Berwick-upon-Tweed. It's beautiful.
It is, yeah.
And with the potential, indeed, next week, the first new carriages are being launched by GNER in over 30 years. First new carriages. We may, touch wood, do a little connection with that. We'll have to wait and see. It's always very exciting. Well, I think that was very effective, Ian. I feel as though we've actually moved from Peter Mitchell, Lynn Spencer, Jodie, and other friends on Facebook right the way through to the views of a possible new political party. You heard it here first, City United, which could actually just address...
Nigel Farage would be quaking his boots.
Who? You know, exactly. Who? Step away from that line of things. So, would you like to put those last two questions? Given that there is one slight caveat, Ian, I'll warn you about this, because of our location with this programme next week.
Right.
So, Ian, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic for us today on the show?
Yes, I have. I enjoyed this one, yes.
Good. And will you either be joining us in the pre-record next week or 2 weeks' time?
Yeah.
Yes, I don't mind either. Yeah. Both, I don't know.
There we are. Ian will return.
Okay, mate.
Trevor Horn. And the other buggle, Johnny, on the monorail. And the time coming around to 6.5 minutes to 9 o'clock here on Siren Radio. And, well, in the next hour of the production, all being well, Brian Tompkins, optometrist, Rosie Dummer. Or is it drummer? We must get this sorted out, actually. Ben, is it a D or is there an R?
No, that's just Dummer.
It is actually Rosie Dummer, so not Dumb and Dummer.
Unless you've put a typo in.
I think we need to look at the original thing from this point of view, because if they're listening...
It is Dummer, yes.
It is Dummer. That's okay. Just wanted
to
clarify.
Channel 4's Extreme Cake Makers.
Yeah, that's very important, because it is a very good show, very important. Multi-award-winning cake artist, Rosie Dummer, also known as Rosie Cake Diva. I think that'd be quite nice, actually, Rosie Cake Diva. We'll also be speaking to Daria Filis, Mario Ambrosi and Simon Payton from Anchor Hangover about the importance of physical activity in later life. William Sitwell might join us. Danny Wallace, author and comedian, will be with us. And Ewan McLennan talking about news of a natural remedy for pain relief. And that can only be good news, which is pretty much the format we take here on Siren Radio. Upcoming, let's see, it's the Ego Ritual and Chakra Maraca. And then we might just squeeze in a little touch of Ben Simmons and Olivia to take us through to the news. Honestly, sometimes we spoil you.
At me while I'm down and out. Oh, Olivia. Red wine, a strained mind. Every time I heart I don't want to find. Oh, Olivia. Cause she's all in time with the beat. Maybe I'd like to get over it by placing myself at your feet. No feelings ever got in between. Cause I'm in love with pieces of diamonds you left behind when you saw I was crying when you saw.
somebody else. I'd rather be with a lion than a siren. But I ain't that bold now. Olivia, Olivia, sheets of gold now. Olivia, Olivia, break the mold. And I thought I got away, but she don't give up easily. Olivia, Olivia, come and get me. Sundown, block out everything that you can live without. Pushing me away. Whoa, I don't want you. But I have to congratulate you from leading me astray. Cause there'd be no song without you. Cause I used to be in love with the diamonds you left behind when you saw I was crying when you somebody else. I'd rather be with a lion than a siren. But I ain't that bold, no. Olivia, Olivia, sheets of gold, no. Olivia, Olivia, break the mold. And I thought I got away, but she don't give up easily. Oh, Olivia, Olivia,
and the weather today is for Lincolnshire, highs of 10 degrees centigrade, lows of 3 degrees centigrade, a day of light rain with moderate breeze, so no danger of sun glare. But it is Sun Awareness Week, and it would seem that British folk are putting themselves and other road users in danger by making reckless decisions on the road by driving their cars without appropriate sunglasses, according to research by Maui Jim. Now, to talk about this and the importance of ensuring that you don't be blinded by the light when you're driving in particular, we're delighted to welcome optometrist extraordinaire from Tompkins Knight and Son Optometrists. That'd be the fabulous Brian Tompkins. How are you, Brian?
Good morning. I am rocking here.
Marvellous. We'd like to hear that. Now, Brian, talk to us about this particular thing, because it is very worrying, not only for passengers in vehicles where you've got drivers who are going to be blinded by the sunlight, but also, of course, other vehicles, other road users, indeed even pedestrians.
Indeed, pedestrians. They could be children. They could be running out from shadows. They could be not seen because of the glare off a wet road, or even off, you know, just even a shiny road is a danger to the world of driving and road users generally. And the beauty of it is that we have such an easy facility to calm this all down. And the research from Maui Jim has been excellent in putting forward the findings that, you know, there's a high percentage of potential accidents going on. Something like 40%, just under 40% of road users have admitted they get dazzled by the sun, and they've been concerned in their own minds that they've virtually had near misses. You know, it's like trying to pull out of a junction. Hmm. You can't quite see because the sun's low.
Was there not a certain member of the royal family, Prince Philip, who actually had an issue with respect to sun just a few months ago?
That just hit the headlines. You know, hopefully it made people go out and think more about vision and sun protection and making the whole road safety a lot higher in their thinking.
In the studio we have Ben Lewis. Ben, of course, you passed your driving test. Congratulations again.
Thank you.
Just a few months ago. Yeah. Was this something that was covered within the whole driving scenario?
I wouldn't say not as much as probably I'd like for it to have been. I mean, don't get me wrong, the sun visor's great, sunglasses, all helpful. Mm. But as you just mentioned there, one of the interesting things was, especially when it's just rained, and the glare on the road, it's almost something that you can't protect yourself from. If you don't have sunglasses on, whilst you're driving, it's difficult to get them, you don't want to get distracted. Mm. And then also the sun visor doesn't exactly cover it because it's on the road.
No, but it's having the correct sunglasses. There's a real difference between just sunglasses you can buy which are dropping the light down, but with no allocation of which rays they drop. And it's really important from a health point of view to drop the correct ones, from a vision point of view to drop the horizontal reflections. And the polarization, you know, within Maui Jim's range and many others, but certainly the range that we work with as the kind of top end of the optometrist's choices, they drop out the horizontal rays. So you can imagine reflections off that wet road are just dropped down to visibility. So you can actually see what's going on as opposed to being glared.
It's worth noting, of course, that there are actually limits as to how dark sunglasses are allowed to be whilst driving. Would you just talk us through that, Brian, just to ensure we know?
Well, logically, I mean, you've got to have a certain level of light, and all specs, all sunglass tints, etc., are done in a luminance transmission factor. It just means how much light comes through. And if it's less than 8%, then you're into illegality and danger, because it'd be like driving with night goggles on, so you can't actually see what's going on.
Wear them, but only if you're driving a driverless car, which is kind of like a contradiction
terms, really.
Yeah. Different line
there. How far away is that in the future?
Who knows, Brian? That's the key thing from that point of view. Where can people go to find out more about Sun Awareness Week and indeed some of the things we've just touched on so far today?
Oh, it is important to have really professional advice from your optometrist or dispensing optician. And, you know, we are skilled and knowledgeable about which sunglasses. You can choose from various ranges and... more importantly, get them to fit well and be absolutely comfortable on your face, because most people are annoyed by them slipping. So get them fitted properly rather than just buying them at an airport, for example, and having them slide without really professional knowledge to get them right.
Also well worth going to the AA.com with Twilight Dazzle, another line from that point of view, because, of course, sunrise, sunset, glare on the road and so on, all important. Ben, any other final thoughts?
Yeah, how can people perhaps reduce sort of glare and things like that whilst they drive? Would you recommend put them down the sun visor or sunglasses? Is the only sort of preferable method?
Well, there's no other way. I mean, if you think about it, you're on the road, you're driving, you've got to see where you're going. The sun visor, it's like wearing a hat outside, so having a peak cap cuts down the harmful rays for long-term damage to the eye, because there's unfortunately a lot of those around nowadays. And then choosing absolutely the best. The research from Maui says that 55% of drivers are unaware how they could be improving things. So go get professional advice and really talk through your needs, and somebody will choose for you the best way to do it.
And of course, you can also go to MauiGym.com in terms of finding out further details.
That's another option, indeed. Yeah.
MauiGym.com. Brian, it's been fantastic sharing some thoughts with your good self. Optometrist extraordinaire, as we said in the introduction, obviously from Tompkins Knight and Son Optometrists. Are you the son or are you the senior, just out of interest?
Neither. The Knight and Son was the original business name, and I added mine in. It's 1868, it was first the first inception. So. Yeah, luckily I'm on radio, not television.
It's a whole new world. Brian Tompkins, many thanks indeed. Take care now.
No problem, thank you.
Much like a wonderful works of a multi-award-winning cake artist, sunshine on a rainy day, she brings sunshine to all manner of things. It's the fabulous Rosie Dummer. How are you, Rosie?
Oh, that was nice. Wear that every day to me.
It'll be available as a podcast, so there you go. You're here today to actually talk about something which is particularly interesting from the point of view of, obviously, our listener from that point of view, not only the joys of culinary therapy, but also how you're connecting with a fundraising manager at Health for Heroes, Dean Williams. Good morning, Dean.
Good morning, Alex.
Excellent. Dean, do you like... Has Rosie brought in any cake today? I've got to ask that question. But...
Not today, but I have actually tasted Rosie's cakes before.
They were
sublime.
The on-broadcast team were probably anticipating cake to be brought in, Rosie. Oh, Lord.
They may well have been, but they brought us some instead, which is nice. Nobody ever makes me a cake.
Well, I don't know. Do I intimidate them?
Possibly.
I mean, might be the harshest critique, maybe.
It is a thought. The voice there of Ben Lewis. I've got to say, Rosie, before we move into the piece of this particular thing, extreme cake making, because, you know, I did think, is that one which you actually make the cake whilst you're skiing down the north face of the Eiger?
Yeah, abseiling out of the helicopter, all of the above.
Yeah, excellent. We'd like to hear that. Now, Lemon Drizzle has recently been revealed as the nation's favourite sweet bake, with 12% of UK adults selecting this as their favourite, beating chocolate brownies, carrot cake and Victoria sponge. Were you surprised by this, Rosie?
No, I wasn't actually. Do you know what? My kids are used to my cakes, but they would take a Lemon Drizzle over one of my fancy cakes any day. So, no, I'm not surprised. I like Lemon Drizzle, don't you?
Yeah, actually, yes, I suppose
I do. Yeah. One of your five a day as well.
And what about... I see what you did there, Ben. There could be a challenge from that point of view. In terms of this particular side of things and culinary therapy, the fact that actually making a cake can be really therapeutic. I mean, this is something where you think, Dean, turning to yourself as fundraising manager for Help for Heroes, how often do you actually say, right, I'm going to chill out now. I'm too stressed by watching the antics of Tottenham and Liverpool and the European Cup matches. I'm going to make a cake.
Well, actually, it's a massively therapeutic activity. I'm not particularly very good at baking cakes myself, but I've worked in one of our recovery centres previously, and we used to take our beneficiaries cooking with the sixth formers from a local school, actually, and it's a massively therapeutic activity, a great mindful activity. You're just concentrating on what you're doing at that moment in time, not worried about your stresses and your strains of the day and when your next surgery is. Just focused on what you're doing, so it's a brilliant therapeutic activity.
I have to say, Rosie, returning to your good self, I mean, moving into cake making after being a helicopter pilot with the British Army, flying Lynx anti-tank helicopters with the Army Air Corps in Germany, Britain and Canada. I mean, did you secretly, whilst you're doing that, in charge of the whole thing and checking everything else, thinking, do you know, I really could be doing with making a nice chocolate cake now, really? That's the ultimate thing I'm looking for.
No, it never even occurred to me. But I think it's one of those things that anybody can do. Anyone can, you know, pick up a baking pan, get your buns out, start baking. And I just did it for my kids, and it turned out that I was rather good at it. So for me, it was just an accident, a happy accident. But the truth is, I do it professionally. Look at the world. Everybody does it. Everyone bakes. It's not as though you have to be a professional to be baking. And I think those are the people we're calling to. We're calling to the general population who watch the Bake Off and think, I could do that, or I'd like to do that. We're giving you a really good reason to do it.
Well, I think certainly William Sitwell, who might be joining us later on, will be very impressed with this side of things. Now, let's talk a bit more about this Help for Heroes and the Force for Good by organising the biggest bake sale possibly ever during Armed Forces Week of the 22nd to 29th of July. June, I should say. Let's get the month right. June, Lord. What's going to happen with respect to that, Dean? How can people get involved?
Yeah, so the charity was founded on the belief that anybody that signed up to support their to serve their country in the armed forces should be given a fair deal afterwards, and that's what Help for Heroes are here for. We want to make sure these guys and girls can lead a fulfilling life and get the support they need for life, and so we're calling on the nation to support our most seriously injured to receive the support they need. And you can do that by getting involved in Bake for Heroes. You can do it during Armed Forces Week. You can do it any time you like. Could be schools, could be at work, could be at home. Just get baking, buy some cakes if you need to, and raise a little bit of money to support.
Do you know, we've had two bake-off challenges on the Midweek Drive over the years. I think we might actually introduce a third one. I might launch it. What do you think, Ben? Bake for Heroes.org.uk?
It's a very good cause. I think we'd very much endorse that.
Hashtag Bake for Heroes.
Oh, please do. We'd love that. And will you show us what you make? I really want you to do it.
We can even get William Sitwell to judge it, or we can get Rosie to judge it as well.
I think the deal's being made.
And even Dean, we can get them all in.
Exactly. I'm quite good at tasting cake.
Dean's an expert.
We will work through that. Rosie Dummer and Dean Williams, many, many thanks indeed. And a reminder, of course, it's bakeforheroes.org.uk. We will continue to follow this as the excitement of June builds up. Fantastic. Many thanks indeed.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Well, can't you see that it's just raining? There ain't no need to go outside. But baby, you hardly even notice when I
try to show you. Song is meant to keep you doing what you're supposed to. Waking up too early, maybe we could sleep. Make you banana pancakes, pretend like it's the weekend now. We could pretend it all the time. Can't you see that it's just raining? There ain't no need to go outside. But just maybe like a ukulele. Mama made a baby. Really don't mind the practice, cause you're my little lady. Lady, lady, love me, cause I love to lay you lazy. We could close the curtains, pretend like there's no world outside. We could pretend it all the time, Lord. And can't you see that it's just raining? There ain't no need to go outside. Ain't no need, ain't no need.
Hey, slightly mellow Jack Johnson with Banana Pancakes, taking us out of our little cake feature there with the awesome extreme cake maker, Rosie, and onwards to an interesting story which might possibly be addressed by more activity in the kitchen, because physical inactivity in later life might well be costing the NHS more than £1.3 billion by 2030. Physical inactivity of people aged 55 and over will cost the NHS £103 million this year. And 76% of older people do wish they were more physically active. Now, to talk about this, we're delighted to welcome the campaign manager of Anchor Hanover, I should say. Not Hangover, that's another type of activity entirely. It's Daria Feliz. How are you, Daria?
Hi, well, thanks. How are you?
Excellent. Daria, talk us about this research by Anchor Hanover and indeed the launch of 10 Today.
So, as you said, inactivity among older people is a big issue, and we're developed 10 Today to encourage more older people to get fit and active in a really fun way. The broadcasts, you can listen online or on the radio, and they're sort of short 10-minute exercises that run through lots of different fun things and just get people moving.
Is it a case of taking small baby steps to actually work through that process? Because, you know, we move. We are creatures who, I'm not saying like sharks, if you stop moving, you're ended all, basically. But you need to kind of keep on going, even though sometimes you might think, oh, I can't get out of bed, it's too much. It kind of, you need to take those small steps further forward.
Yes, absolutely. And this 10 Today has been designed by older people for older people. So it's been designed by one of our residents, Terry Keane. He's 72 and he's a fitness instructor, and, you know, he's amazing. And the programs have been designed with older people in mind. They can be done anywhere, anytime, in a group, standing up, sitting down, and with really adaptable to different fitness levels. So it's something that everyone can do and get involved in.
We've got Ben Lewis in the studio, as mentioned. Ben, you're about 50 years away from hitting your 70s, so that's fair enough.
Mentally, I'm about 86.
That's a fair point. Yeah. Any questions you'd like to put to Daria?
Yes, quite interesting, actually. I mean, I know we've seen the trend in the last few years of things like walking football and walking rugby, and the sports that have really taken off. Do you think sports like that allow older people to get more involved, allow them to actually be able to get out of the house and get more physically active and better their health?
Very much so. I mean, this is all part of a wider program. You know, if any activity is good activity at the end of the day. And our research has shown that even, you know, 10 minutes a day, maybe sort of three times a week, will really help people improve their core fitness, prevent falls in later life. It can really help reduce depression and dementia as well. So these are all things that are just really positive benefits for everyone, really.
And where can people go to find out further information, Daria, about Anchor Hanover and indeed the 10 Today programme?
So just visit anchorhanover.org.uk/10today.
It's been awesome sharing some thoughts with your good self. Are you doing exercise in the studio, by the way? Because I'm often told that calisthenics and such like can actually be really good to actually ensure that you're breathing in, posture, all the rest of the bits and pieces.
I'm exercising right now. Some of the 10 Today exercises are called like circling the sky, moving the legs. Again, I'm sitting down and I can still do them too.
Exactly. And that's the sort of message we want to actually share with the world. Daria Feliz, many thanks indeed. Take care. We'll speak soon.
Thanks. Bye.
I I've been out walking. I don't do that much talking these days. These days. These days I seem to think a lot about the things that I forgot to do. And all of the time I had the chance to, I had a lover. I don't think I'll risk another these days. These days. And if I seem to be afraid to live the life that I have made in song, well, it's just 'cause I've been losing so long. Scheming. I don't do all that dreaming these days. These days. These days I sit on cornerstones, count the time in quarter tones to ten. Don't confront me with my failures. I've forgotten them.
See, somehow I can't see Archie Sitwell working quite as well from that point of view. Although, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, William, would you have considered Archie for the most important arrival in the world this year, despite what's been happening with respect to the Sussexes?
I think Archibald is a very respectable name.
And yet he's not going to be called Archibald, as a royal correspondent Richard Fitzwilliams was saying this morning. It's going to be Archie, not Archibald.
Well, he will become known as Archibald.
Indeed.
Just wait.
There you go. William, last week, of course, dare I ask, did you have satisfaction with the car manufacturing company or dealership that you were about to deal with? Because
No.
Oh, so Lord.
We did the work ourselves.
Well, never mind. Still, as long as things get sorted out, that's the important thing. Never mind. Down.
We were all wondering, actually.
Yeah, it was something which was, you know, the unanswered question. I thought, let's cross that bridge straight away before we get into extreme cake making and so on. As you know, William, we've had two competitions over the last few years here with the Midweek Drive, and I think because of Help for Heroes, we're looking to go into a nationwide piece here in terms of extreme cake making. Now, have you encountered in your wonderful culinary experience the joys of star of Channel 4's Extreme Cake Makers, Rosie Dummer?
I'm afraid not. That one's passed me by, but, you know, I don't really get out, as you know. So.
Well, Rosie, when she actually left the army, became winner of the Cake Masters Wedding Cake of the Year Award in 2012 and is very keen. But if I were to ask you, William, because you probably haven't seen this research, what do you think would be the nation's favourite cake, the nation's favourite sweet cake? What would it be?
Well, I mean, it was probably, I would hope, it's either lemon drizzle, Victoria sponge, or chocolate, isn't it?
I was going to say, he's straight in with that whole system. Yes, lemon drizzle. 12% of UK adults selected that as their favourite, beating chocolate brownies with 11%, carrot cake in 10%, and you mentioned Victoria sponge, 10%. That is why...
Yeah, these are very small margins. I mean, they're not winning by 50%.
Hey,
I think...
Are we talking a referendum here? I'm sorry.
Well, I think they put too many... I think there was... You know, people have got to make their mind up, and you've got to limit the choice. And I think the choice should have been between two cakes, so we could have had a firm result. I think if you put five or six cakes on the ballot paper, and then you're talking about margins of 10, 11, and 12%, then I think what we need to do is to eliminate the minority cakes and go for a people's vote. And have another cake referendum, and then at which point we can then move forward.
We can have a new party. It might be Change UK, be Cake UK.
I think Cake UK is a possibility. I still like City United, that I was suggesting for a party we could set up with Ian Lennox in Newcastle, but I feel William could actually be our ace in the hole in many ways when it comes to that political thing, which would maybe, just tip them. Maybe. It would be basically everything that the Rees-Moggs would actually said, gosh, if only we'd done that. You know, it's too late, Annunciata. Yeah. It's too late, Jacob. You know, William's on the case there. He's nailed it. I mean, that delivery of the cake scenario, it's there.
Exactly.
In any way, shape, or form. Finny Ideas from Cakes to page 67 of the wonderful Telegraph magazine, which, again, provided wonderful things from the Futurist Cookbook, originally from 1932, William. What brought you to the Futurist Cookbook?
Well, I was just trying to think of something to write, and I have to come up with this little snippet to the end. But it's a rather amazing book, actually, the Futurist Cookbook, and it's full of the most extraordinary recipes, such as drum roll of colonial fish and other things, other recipes like that, which I don't think were ever intended actually to be cooked.
Well, I was particularly interested in Tyrrhenian seaweed foam. I mean, I think that has to be sort of one of the greatest scenarios that, you know, has yet...
These dishes, which were written by Thomas O. Marinetti in the, whenever it is, the 30s, as a spoof, if you read out those dishes today, it could come out of one of those kind of more bonkers high-end restaurants that you get on the fringes of sort of Barcelona and so on, or Genoa.
Yeah. I mean, favoured ingredients including goose barnacle, dogfish, and spiny dimurex.
Well, you see, in that one, that is from a... So the point I was making there was, if you could spot the spoof dishes from the real thing, and as you'll be able to tell the listener, which restaurant was that I was referring to? I think, is it in Spain?
Indeed, you are actually referring to the 3 Michelin-starred Apanieta in Cadiz.
There you go, you see. Yeah, they're all crazy.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, obviously there are sort of, well, yeah, I suppose.
As crazy as Dorchester?
But I thought you were going to reference my proudest alliteration in history that I've ever come up with.
Yes, yes.
Which was the, talking about the wontons of war-torn Taunton.
I thought I'd leave it for yourself. Because
how long did it come?
I want you to say wonton of war-torn Taunton.
The wonton of war-torn Taunton.
how long did it take to come up with that, William?
Well, these things, they just come out of your head. You just spill onto the page. You just have to feel sorry for the reader. But, you know, someone's paying me, so I just get on with it.
I'm sure someone will tweet you and thank you for producing that.
I mean, we did use the line, a cosy bistro makes for a safe haven in war-torn Taunton, but avoid sundies.
Yep.
Or even sundies. Do you see how I suddenly went into Cockney there? Avoid sundies. You don't want to go there on a sundae. No. So, I mean, with its unfussy decor and cheery staff, Augustus is a glorious refuge in this real or imagined combat zone. I mean, there was
this is referencing the MP who described parts of Taunton as like being in Aleppo.
Yeah.
And the people of Taunton are still pretty cross about it.
I'm not
and
surprised.
I think some people are irritated that I decided to bring it up again. But it's out there.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes, you know, it's there culturally as an issue, then you don't need to... otherwise it becomes an elephant in the room, which is not good at all from that point of view. So how is the book writing coming on, William? How is the research going on and so on?
Well, I've been distracted for the last 3 weeks. I think my editor, I hope he's not listening, will forgive me, but I'm sitting at my desk now, and I'm hoping at some point when I've written my review for next week's Telegraph that I will get on with it and get the book going, because I've had a pause, too many distractions.
Well, we will not delay you any further, William, because it's been magical the last few moments, just as we knew it would be. And the last two questions are going to be delivered for you by Ben in his unique way. And actually, good news, it'll be a fortnight, because next week we will be in London, unless you wish to join us in one of our little London adventures. Anyway, over to you, Ben.
Wherever Lincoln is, I'll be there.
Lovely. William, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic loop for today on the show?
I think it's been telephonic, and it's been reasonable, and it's been interesting.
Well, I'm glad it's fulfilled your criteria today. And will you be joining us again on the pre-record either next week or in 2 weeks' time?
I think it'll be 2 weeks' time.
2 weeks' time?
Yeah.
I do hope so.
Yeah.
I'll
Wonderful.
See you then. Bye.
We'll see you then.
And all the
I suggest perfect background music for the floating cat sanctuary of Amsterdam we were talking about with great amusement yesterday. That's quite apart from the number one spot, of course, the David Hasselhoff Museum. I know, amazing. Who can we speak to actually address these issues about British holidaymakers being irritated by packed and pricey tourist hotspots and missing out some of Europe's most overlooked tourist attractions? Well, it could only be a writer, comedian, author, general all-round wonderful person, Renaissance man even. It's Danny Wallace. How are you, Danny?
Hello, I'm very well. How are you?
Excellent.
And you're right, by the way. Enya does provide the perfect background to watching cats float around.
Exactly. This is the key thing. Probably a slight meow, a slight mew. This was number two. I mean, I'm still recovering from the shock of the lack of strokeable chest hair that was actually put together on the number one slot of the top five most overlooked European tourist attractions. Of course, the David Hasselhoff Museum.
Well, absolutely. And it is, you know, it's I firmly believe it is a key landmark now within Berlin. And it's just a pity not more people are going to see it and, you know, stroke the chest hair of TV's Knight Rider.
Exactly.
I lived in Berlin in the early 90s as a kid, just after the war came down. And I'd moved there thinking, well, you know, Hasselhoff, he's the guy from Knight Rider and Baywatch. Mm-hmm. Not prepared.
No.
For what then happened in Berlin in the early 90s when he just became essentially the most famous man, the most famous rock star in Germany. Yeah. So it is fitting that that Berlin would be home to this museum.
Of course, absolutely. And indeed, from Knight Rider to Baywatch, I mean, slow motion running, the whole kit and caboodle playing
absolutely.
On the Berlin Wall, amazing. And beating, of course, the Museum of Alchemists and Magicians in Prague, the Subterranean Art Gallery in Stockholm, and Mini Europe.
Well, absolutely. You know, it's a tough list to put together, but, you know, with Trainline, I managed to somehow, you know, get this going. Mini Europe in Brussels, like you say, if you are on a budget, you know, why not go to Brussels and just go to what is essentially a massive model village? But the model village, in this case, is all of Europe. So you can just go there. If you've got a decent camera, you can make it look like you've been everywhere, and everyone will be very jealous.
Well, Danny, I have to say, when you also add in the notions of the Nose Academy, the Nose Nose.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about the Nose Academy, because this almost has to be smelt to be seen.
Well, absolutely. Look, we all love noses, don't we? Many of us have our own.
What a hooter.
And if you're in Sweden, then why not go, you know, to the Nose Academy? Mm. You've got plaster casts of larger noses, plaster casts of smaller noses. There are noses in between, if that's your thing. And just a lovely monument as well, kind of a tribute to the unknown nose. So you can go there, you know, see as many noses as you want, and then get on a train and explore somewhere else. So that's the beauty of it. I've tried to include places that aren't just the kind of the real hotspots, the places that you fly to. These are the places you can travel to once you are somewhere, because that is such a great way of exploring the world, just sitting down, watching it go by, getting off some random place and looking at loads of noses.
Yep. And of course, you're probably far too young to remember the Woody Allen movie Sleeper, in which a whole new leader is cloned from the leader's nose.
I do remember that, yeah. Well, presumably that was the inspiration for this.
I would have thought so. Ben Lewis, you've been looking at those sort of factors and lines in the studio here. I'm still sort of getting my head around Starkenberger's Brewery's beer pools. You can swim in 42,000 pints of lager.
Well, doesn't that sound like every stag weekend ever anyway? No, absolutely. You can really, I mean, talk about, you know, throwing yourself into a culture. That's swimming around in it. I imagine you would reek for days.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be worth it.
Ben Lewis, thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I must admit, I've not heard of any of these.
Exactly.
Despite even being to Amsterdam, Brussels, you know, I've not heard of any of them. Although,
well,
they're very intriguing.
That's
very
why
intriguing.
They've been overlooked.
Exactly.
They've been overlooked.
Exactly.
For too long.
It's not something you quite see on TripAdvisor, I think. But,
no, it's not. It'd be terrible if I'd made all these up, but these are actual, genuine places. There are some that didn't even make it in there, you know. I'm going to Berlin at the end of the month.
How did you find these, though? How did you find them?
Do you have a nose for them? Sorry, I couldn't resist it.
I do have a nose for them. Some recommendations. Some you find people taking pictures of, Instagram and Twitter. But, you know, hard-nosed journalistic research will always lead you to, you know, for example, the floating cat sanctuary that you were talking about just yesterday, which is a lovely, I think it's a lovely idea as well, just kind of a forward-thinking thing that the people of Amsterdam do, where rather than just letting their kittens and strays just run around the street, give them a nice life, put them somewhere, and allow people to come and pet them and give them a taste of home. I don't know if you're a cat person, Ben.
More dogs, if I'm honest.
Okay, don't go there. Don't go there. You're going to hate it.
But for listeners who are fans of cats...
Mm. It was certainly greeted very positively by our team last night. I'm particularly interested, again, with undergraduates obviously looking for that wonderful ultimate experience of joy and happiness at the world's smallest nightclub, which is actually housed within a telephone box.
It's just a little telephone box, you know, if you're in Germany and you fancy just, you know...
Booging down.
Boogie. Yeah.
Listening to David Hasselhoff, perhaps, you know, Hasselhoff on their phones.
That would be mandatory, I think, that it would have to be Hasselhoff. But, you know, just a little you time, just in a telephone box listening to loud music. There's all these things. And, in fact, on that note, in Germany, one I didn't include is the Currywurst Museum, which is dedicated to a real delicacy in Germany. It's just a bratwurst covered in tomato ketchup and mixed with curry powder. That's it. However, it's so popular, it has its own museum now. So you can go and you can look at different types of ketchup, you can taste different types of curry powder, and you can eat as much sausage as you want. So, that's a day out for me.
I can see it opening up a whole new world of negotiations with both Theresa May, Donald Tusk, and probably even Jeremy Corbyn as well, just to actually say, look, guys, we need this on the agenda. It needs to be worked for.
Bring these people together, you know, give them a currywurst and let them sort it out.
And thetrainline.com is presumably the place to go to find out further details about the research.
Yeah, they sort of approached me and said, look, you know, everyone's getting very annoyed at tourist hotspots and, you know, they want to be travellers, they want to have real experiences. What are some of the places they can go? Yeah. I'm a big sort of train fan. I was on the Orient Express last year, the Berliner Express that goes through Switzerland and really takes you through little towns and villages that you wouldn't normally see. And that, I think, is the key thing. Enjoy the big cities, enjoy the big landmarks, but you can always, you know, hop on a train and see something that none of your mates have seen.
And are there particular issues when it comes to British folk in particular that are really annoying folk? I can imagine passport queues coming up in the near future, but that's another issue, of course.
Going to get worse, yeah. Yeah, passport queues in general, overcrowded areas, which again is that thing of, you know, you could queue for 40 minutes to, you know, go up the Eiffel Tower, and, you know, you should do that once in your life, you know, of course. You could go somewhere that no one else is going and see things that no one else is seeing. I think that tourist has almost become a word we don't want to be associated with. The traveller, getting out there, exploring, that is where we want to be right now.
Well, you've done so well, as we knew you would, Danny. We're going to actually sort of wrap up with a final little task for you in terms of awarding you the role of music producer. We can offer you, and the listener, of course, there's Visage, A Night Train, Ocean Colour Scene, and The Day We Caught the Train. See what we did this? The Monkees, Last Train to Clarksville, Squeeze and Electric Trains, or indeed The Band Train with Ordinary. Which one do you want to go for?
Well, coming up right now, if you want to go to the Chip Museum in Belgium, you're going to have to catch the train. So let's have Ocean Colour Scene, The Day We Caught the Train.
Wow. I think you've got Alex's new job now.
Sorted through. Two final questions. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today, Danny Wallace?
I have enjoyed myself greatly.
And are you going to be able to join us again in the very near future with more train exciting news and more wonderment? Will you come back?
Of course I will.
Never saw it as the start. It's more change of heart. Rapping on the windows, whistling down the chimney pot. Blowing out the dust in the room where I forgot. I laid my plans in solid rock. Stepping through the door like a troubadour, whining just an hour away. Looking at the trees on the roadside, feeling it's a holiday. But you and I should ride the coast and wind up in our favorite coast just miles away. Roll a number, write another song like Jimmy heard the day, ride the train. Oh,
stepping to the door with a night star while I'm just an hour away. Stepping to the sky and the star bright, feeling it's a brighter day.
Still to come on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition, we'll be speaking to Ewan McLennan, who is the herbal director at Pucker Herbs, talking about natural remedies for pain relief. And away they go, Man from Man, Fox on the Run. That'll take us around neatly to an issue that, sadly, an awful lot of our listeners, and indeed Britain, will be suffering from: chronic joint pain. Over a fifth of people in the UK say that they suffer daily from acute and chronic pain, increasing to a third of over 55s, with over a quarter taking painkillers daily as a result, 42% at least once a week, and over half therefore being open to natural remedies. We need to address some of the key issues that can help this, and natural things are good things. So when we've got the herbal director at Pucker Herbs, then clearly we're going to get some sensible information. Ewan McLennan, good morning, how are you?
Good morning, I'm very well. How are you?
Very good indeed. Now, let's talk a little bit about the research that's been carried out in terms of this about daily chronic pain issues.
Yes, so Pucker Herbs conducted some research recently
which looked at 2,000 participants across the UK, and we were trying to get a deeper understanding, which is an important thing for us to do at the moment, about how chronic pain affects people's lives. This is not only important because it affects quality of life for a lot of listeners, as you've just said, but also because it's one of the areas in which the government is directing research funding at the moment, because we have a gap in understanding these conditions and also treating them effectively.
Herbal remedies have gone through various phases of popularity over the last few years. Many people actually say they're great. Other people say no, they're not important. Other people say, well, they're essential. We kind of need to get back in touch with them. From your own experience of herbal remedy and herbal remedy medicine, etc., is it that people still think, I'm not going to put my trust in that, I just want to have a few pills?
I think the questions regarding trust and herbal medicine are really complex, and they actually vary from country to country within the EU and across the world. But I think generally there's an awareness of herbal medicine. There's an awareness amongst most populations that herbal medicine can be of benefit to health. But there's a sad lack of understanding as to how herbal medicines can be properly harnessed to support individual health. And also, unfortunately, our healthcare professionals in this country certainly are not trained to understand herbal medicines properly in any way that they can recommend them to patients who come in. And I think that means that lack of recommendation means a lack of trust starts to breed. And what we really need to do is get it just a little bit under the skin of them and start to look at the academic research that is coming out year upon year, showing that if we need to properly understand how medicines can play a strong future for looking after humanity, then we need to start looking more at herbal medicines. And they were the fundament of medicine from the whole of history. It's where most of our medicines in primary and secondary care come from in the first place.
A few years ago, we were doing some interesting location reports with some Chinese herbalists, and it seemed as though, certainly from my observations, that the Chinese herbal medicine industry was light years ahead of where we were positioned in Britain, having gone more down a kind of pharmaceutical route. Was that something you'd say tended to resonate? I mean, can we learn a great deal from, shall we say, more advanced cultures when it comes to herbal medicine?
Learning from other cultures when it comes to herbal medicine is always a benefit. I think learning from other cultures for anything is a benefit. But absolutely, Japan and China, they integrate the herbal medicine practices and the conventional medicine practices. But actually, you don't even need to go that far. If you just look across the channel at Germany, they integrate a lot of their herbal medicines into their primary care. So when you go to see a GP, you may be prescribed herbal medicines. If you go to see a pharmacist at the chemist, they're quite likely to recommend herbal medicines to you as well. And that's because they still train in it and they look at the research that's coming up each year on it. And we know that in the UK we have some fundamental issues with our health service. We read about it in the paper, we listen to it on the radio every day, and we need to find things that future-proof our healthcare industry. And one of those that is staring us in the face at the moment are simple self-care remedies like medicines and like foods that really do improve quality of life.
Ben Lewis, anything you'd like to ask?
Yeah, I mean, it's quite interesting, especially with certain debates around certain type of herbal medicines. I think the biggest one at the minute is cannabis oil, and the, you know, and how much it can do to relieve pain in certain people with certain conditions. What's your thoughts around something like that, for example? Do you think integration of those types of medicines should be included?
If we're looking specifically at cannabis oil, I know there's plenty of research out there that shows it benefits neurological conditions. It's something that the medical profession here have been looking at. So the MHRA that regulates how medicines are licensed within this country are looking at this and its future in healthcare. So there are eyes open to this whole question. But I think taking it back to aspects that affect the broad majority of the population in the UK, pain is a particularly important place to look at, and also the use of a common culinary ingredient like turmeric, which is not expensive. It's available, you know, just in a shop anywhere, and that's what makes it so valuable to healthcare, because you're empowering people to look after their own health in a way that is safe and efficacious, and that's where I'd like us to start looking for healthcare.
And turmeric, of course, has been hailed as the queen of protective herbs. Is that, I mean, is it a magic bullet on that sort of basis? People are thinking, oh, I need to try some turmeric, and is it something about that kind of works very much to relieve pain?
The magic bullet aspect of turmeric is another interesting question. It stems very much from the Ayurvedic traditional use. It's been an Indian medicine that's been used for centuries for looking after human health. But the more and more we look at it in research, and at Pucker we have a research team that we're looking through the published research at the moment, found about 6,000 papers that attribute to its health benefits. We find those stem everything from pain to inflammation to your blood fat levels, so cholesterol levels, to your blood sugar levels, and also to digestive benefits. It does seem to affect a lot of aspects of human health. And the interesting thing about it is that makes absolute sense, because it's not modeled like a conventional drug which takes one isolated compound for one particular illness. Turmeric contains a broad spectrum of compounds, probably about 250 natural compounds. So it also makes sense that it may affect various different systems within the body. It's not targeted at one system, so that's why it has a broad effect on human health.
When you've been lecturing at the University of East London and talking about clinical medical pathologies, etc., has this been a journey that you've been on, you and in terms of actually exploring the system? Were you initially sceptical, or is it a case of, you know, constantly be looking for ways in which we can alleviate pain in a more natural way, which is very much in keeping with the body's own unique systems, as opposed to pumping in drugs and chemicals?
So my interest in natural health started probably about 15 years ago. So believe it or not, I started life as a lawyer. So I'm very much grounded in evidence. I'm grounded in rational thought. And when I stepped outside of law and studied medicine, it became quickly clear to me that we need to have some serious thought in aspects of how we empower people to look after their health. And also, I didn't want to step back into, following everybody else and where medicine was going. I just saw so much promise in this, and it also appeals to my rational side and my evidence-based side, and I can see so much good that is here to be done. And I look at the UK system of healthcare, which I have admired for many, many years, and I know we all hold as dear, but it is in dire trouble at the moment, and we need to think about ways that we step outside of the box that we're working in at the moment, and we incorporate other modalities that can support people and help people to support themselves, because we just can't continue as we are with healthcare.
Yeah, I think you've raised a huge number of points there, which are going to certainly provide a resonance across the days to come and weeks to come and so on. Puckerherbs.com presumably would be the best place to find out further details about what we've been chatting about today. Puckerherbs.com, yes?
Yeah, if you go through to puckerherbs.com, we've got a digital learning environment there, a whole Pucker collective, and you can explore your health and your lifestyle and think about treating yourself as an individual and a person within your healthcare environment. It will make all the difference to your world.
Well, Ewan, I think I got a general sense there of some very interesting and very fascinating information that can obviously impact on joint pain, muscle pain, headaches, nerve pain, abdominal pain. I mean, actually, something like I've noticed an increased preponderance of people or increasing numbers of people suffering from migraines and such like these days. Can this also be a way in which you look at a natural treatment for the pain that many people actually suffer, where it's debilitating because of the migraines they suffer from?
So if you're looking specifically at migraine, I just reiterate what I was saying earlier, which is take a step back, look at yourself, look at your body, your health, your lifestyle, and don't look for one magic bullet that's just going to make that migraine better, but think about how you can incorporate diet, how you can incorporate exercise and lifestyle change. Your state of mind is so important. There are loads of aspects that feed into migraines, because actually they're very poorly understood from a medical point of view, and the answers to them can be very broad. But turmeric could certainly play a part in that, because it affects so many multiple systems in the body, everything from your digestion up to the inflammatory aspects of neural tissue, that it can be of benefit. It's something that I might recommend to patients if they came in to see me with a problem like that.
Ewan McLennan, Herbal Director at Pucker Herbs, many thanks indeed, and hopefully we'll speak again soon and keep us appraised of Matters Herbal and so on.
We would love to. Thank you very much for the invitation.
Let's dance in style, let's dance for a while. Heaven can wait, we're only watching the skies. Hoping for the best, but expecting the worst. Are you gonna drop the bomb or not? Let us die young, or let us live forever. We don't have the power, but we know.
never say never. Sitting in a sandpit, life is a short trip. The music's for the sad man. Can you imagine when this race is won? Turn our golden faces into the sun. Raising our leaders, we're getting in tune. The music's played by the madman.
Beatle and Forever Young. Thanks to Gabriella Peralta, Richard Fitzwilliams, Ian Lennox, Brian Tompkins, our optometrist, Rosie Dummer, Extreme Cake Maker, Help for Heroes, Dean Williams, Derriere Felice from Anchor Hanover, William Sitwell, Danny Wallace, Ewan McLennan, and you, of course, dear listener, for being part of the last couple of hours, or however long you've been part of the whole thing, or even if you're listening on podcast. It would seem, Ben, that Emma Street slept in. Probably celebrating Tottenham's result.
Probably. It's been a long night, I imagine.
Yeah, well, you know, it happens. Anyway, don't forget, Sound and Chloe's Vision on at 7 o'clock this evening. Lots of great things happening from Siren Radio throughout the day. And let's not forget, you still might just be able to go along and see Jason Lewis at the Isaac Newton Building if you're in Lincoln and heading to the University of Lincoln. Isaac Newton Building, 6 o'clock this evening. Jason Lewis, a man who is a superhero in every sense of the word, for the environment, for travelling around the globe and so on, and an inspirational speaker. That's Jason Lewis this very evening. Don't forget the Pint of Science events coming up as well very shortly. We will be leaving you now because it's the news.
Online. Mobile. This is Siren Radio Lincoln.